And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's good to be with you this Saturday morning. And I can't wait to take some phone calls. But before I do that, I want to share a couple things with you. Number one, I talked to a woman yesterday just very briefly, just in passing out in public, and she was saying, what about my daughter with Crohn's disease? And I kind of thought about that after I left the conversation. I wish I'd been a little bit more detailed. But I just want you to consider something. If you have an autoimmune disease where your immune system is kind of turned against your own tissues of your body, and then with Crohn's disease, the immune system starts attacking the lining of your gut, most likely the large intestine. Other parts, yes, but mainly your gut. And so you're trying to get to, okay, what do I do here? What do I do about this? My daughter's a nurse. She's highly intelligent. But what are the long-term consequences of taking those biologic medications? And it's been my experience, because I ask everyone that walks in my door, did your doctor actually discuss with you what the side effects are of taking these medications long-term? I don't think I've had a person say yes yet. They just don't give out both sides of the equation. It's like I talked to a woman yesterday, and she said, the cancer doctor said, this is a sheet of paper that I have to give you, and it tells you all the side effects and all the things that are going to happen that are bad, but I don't want you to look at that. Don't even read that. All I want you to do is I want you to take the chemotherapy so you can live. And when the lady said, well, what about the side effects? Well, you'll be alive, but you may not be able to feel your feet, and you might have neuropathy, and you might lose all your hair. And anyway, it keeps going. Enough of that right there. But this is what the lady asked me. She said, is it safe to take CBD oil? And I think basically CBD is just an abbreviation for cannabinoids. Well, I don't think that, you know, we're making up something brand new, but I was telling her that, you know, how the human body has a circulatory system, and that circulatory system is going to be the transportation of food and nutrition and vitamins and minerals and oxygen, and you've got red blood cells and platelets, white blood cells, antibodies, all that good stuff. And then we have a different system called the lymphatic system. And the lymphatic system is probably almost identical to the circulatory system, except it carries lymph fluid. I asked a lady yesterday, she's super smart, by the way, that's why I asked her. Total setup on my part. I said, guess where the lymph fluid's made? She said, the liver. I said, bingo, you're right. And so your liver produces this lymphatic fluid, which is like dishwashing liquid to scrub your cells clean and make sure that they're free of debris and they're functional. Just like you want to bathe the outside of the body, well, your lymphatic fluid is what bathes the inside of the body. And so all the waste is released from the lymphatic system into your large intestine. And so I said, just like we have a circulatory system that carries blood and we have a lymphatic system that carries lymph, we have God's design, of course. It's called the endocannabinoid system. But this one's different. This one is not designed to deliver nutrients and oxygen to the cells or the tissues like your blood is. And it's not designed to filter out impurities like the lymphatic system is. Oh, no. The endocannabinoid system that God designed, it is responsible for maintaining the balance of your hormones. And when I say hormones, I mean all hormones. If you say, what if I'm a woman and I'm primarily made of estrogen and progesterone? Hey, it does that. It tries to keep them in balance. Well, what if I have depression and I have a lack of serotonin? Well, your endocannabinoid system is really responsible for maintaining the balance or the homeostasis of every neurotransmitter, whether you say dopamine. I don't know if you know this or not, but to me this is a very fascinating topic. But 95% of all serotonin that your body manufactures is made in your gut. It's not made in the brain. Well, a little bit, but the vast majority comes from the gut. So you can probably kind of figure out that having good gut health is of primary importance when it comes to having ambition and drive and motivation. I talked to a gentleman yesterday. We talked about motivation for a person with diabetes. And you know, a doctor can do a pretty good job for the most part of trying to motivate a person, but motivation has to come from inside of you. You got to want it. And so we have this endocannabinoid system, and it's trying to keep every hormone that God has designed in your body to be in perfect balance, and also every neurotransmitter. And those can be things like dopamine and serotonin and norepinephrine, or even epinephrine, GABA, the list goes on, acetylcholine. And so what surprises me is your endocannabinoid system loves fat. It loves fat. What is the word that we call that? Is it called lipophilic? Fat-loving? Yeah, exactly. And so after all, just about every hormone that your body is going to make is going to be a fat-loving hormone. It's made from cholesterol. And so if you want your endocannabinoid system to work well to keep your hormones in balance, you know what I should say is, if you have a hormone imbalance and you have a problem with neurotransmitters, meaning you're probably taking certain medications like Luvox or Prozac, you know, things like that, Zoloft, maybe the real issue is your endocannabinoid system is not being fed. You know, there's a radical thought for you right there. How about we just actually feed the body what it needs so it can function flawlessly? There's a concept. And you got to give it fat. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but the type of oil that comes from cod that swims in the Arctic Ocean, you ever heard of cod liver oil before? That might actually be perfect food for the endocannabinoid system and food for the brain. Everybody at the store wants to grab some Miracle-Gro and put on their tomatoes, but what about putting some cod liver oil on your brain and your nervous system? You can. Well, anyway, that was my point. I said this is a good call on your part. Your daughter's doing a great job. She's doing her own research. She just wants something that can help deal with the inflammation. And I know this is not what we talked about, but if you have a diagnosis of Crohn's disease, do you know what happens if you eat, you know, a ton of French fries and potato chips and onion rings and things that are fried in plant oils like corn oil and soybean oil? All those things generate huge amounts of inflammation. And that's the whole key to everything, is you want to lower the load of inflammation on the body. And one of the ways that you lower the inflammatory load on the body is you do an oil change. So if you tell me, well, what about butter, coconut oil, lard, olive oil, or fish oil? Yes, those are all anti-inflammatory. I know that there's going to be a couple of those that I mentioned that people are going to call and say, I think that's bad, Dr. Morgan. Well, if you look at the long-term studies, when people have used lard to cook their food, they live a lot longer with fewer health problems. I tell you, if you want to die of a heart attack, go get some corn oil and start using that to fry your food in. It's just a matter of time, because that's a garbage oil. Generates huge amounts of inflammation. But they promote it because it doesn't contain cholesterol, whereas eggs would have cholesterol. CBD oil, truth be known, is probably a much better anti-inflammatory without the side effects. But she just wanted to know, is it safe for my daughter to take? And my opinion is, yes, it is. And you're going to find cannabinoids in certain plants that we eat anyway. I think it's found like in asparagus, right? Anyway, point number two. I wish I had done this, but I didn't do it. I should have taken a picture of a man's foot that came to my office when he came in a few weeks ago. And, you know, this just really gets my blood boiling, but he came in, he said, I don't like doctors. Of course, I don't know that I can blame him after what they told him, but he shows up with his foot problem. He's got a bad infection. He's got cellulitis. It does not look good at all. And the doctor tells him, we're going to need to amputate that. I mean, my goodness. That's the first plan right out of the starting gate, is to amputate the foot. And so, yes, the foot looked pretty bad. The other foot didn't look great. During the summertime, when we go without rain and moisture, not like now, where you have plenty of moisture and plenty of rain, you can see with the heat on the surface of a dried up pond, you've got these mud pies kind of curling up at the edges. Well, that's what his other foot looked like. All the skin was crusty and cracked. This is where the people are in the checkout line and they say, hey, here's a cheese grater for sale for the feet. I should get that so I could like try to scrape off that heavy, you know, thick and cracked, bloody skin. It's just crazy. I mean, haven't you seen people in sandals before and you thought, that's got to be the worst foot that I've ever seen in my life? Now, my personal opinion is, when all that skin gets really crusty and thick and cracked and split on the heels and the bottom of the feet, I always think that's a pancreas problem. And so what do you do with the pancreas? Well, you give it a vacation. And so I suggested to him that if he gave up sugar, and when I say give up sugar, I don't have any problem with somebody getting sugar from like raspberries or blueberries, strawberries, dark cherries, which I find very delicious. You know, that's fine. It's not a problem. If you want to eat a small apple, that's usually not what's going to throw your health into a tailspin. So he agreed to this. So he was going to give up soft drinks, give up sugar. I think he started eating real food that God himself has made and designed for us. And then on top of that, he did a sauna a couple, three times a week just to help the toxic material start to roll out of his body or pour out of him. And then I had another crazy idea, and this is going to be totally nuts. I suggested that he start walking on both his feet, which, you know what the doctors tell you? They say, hey, if you've got a problem with your feet, do not walk barefoot. That's the last thing you want to do. Well, he said that he, and this is just his report after the fact, he said he and his girlfriend started walking about a mile a day, and after they came back from their 1 mile walk for exercise, he would take his shoes off and he would walk barefoot on the ground outside the house. And so I said, tell me one more time, what type of ground is this? Is this grass? He said, no, I'm just walking on pine needles. Well, when he pulled his shoes off and showed me the results of what he had been doing, and I think the only supplement we really used was probably just colostrum, which colostrum is it's got to be one of the most amazing superfoods of all time. And it comes from nature. It's just the normal product from a cow. A cow probably makes 100 times more colostrum than what the calf even needs. But I think that's God's provision for us. Now, what is the name of God who's our provider? Isn't that Jehovah Jireh? So anyway, I look at the guy's feet, I'm going, I am nuts. If I had taken a picture with my cell phone or a camera before and then after picture, it would have been the most fabulous transformation of all time. I could have probably put this study in a medical journal. Of course, nobody would believe me. I have never seen the feet look as good as this right here in such a short period of time. But all that thick, crusty, horrible skin on both feet where it was cracked and split and thick, those pine needles just took all of it right off. His skin was perfectly smooth. It's beautiful. So what did I do? I encouraged him to keep going. The other lady that I saw this week, I've actually had about 4 or 5 different cases that really stuck out in my mind, but she tells me she's struggling. She's got some problems. And she tells me, she said, Dr. Morgan, I am so discouraged. I went to my doctor, and all I said to him and the nurse in the room was, do you think that maybe my thyroid could be a problem since I'm overweight and I don't feel good and I don't have any energy? And he quickly put his hand up in my face. He said, you stop it right now. I'll do the diagnosing around here. You need to get off the internet, stop reading stuff, let me take care of you. Anyway, she was very hurt by that, and I don't blame her a lick. But personally, I love it. If you walk in the door, or you call me on the radio here just in a moment, and you tell me you've been trying to study and learn so you can help yourself, I love it. More often than not, people are spot on right. And of course, when I examined her, what did I find? Well, her thyroid was not performing the way it should. You know, we don't have to make this everything rocket science with lab tests. What did doctors do 70 years ago and 100 years ago when they were trying to figure out, let me see, what year would that be? That'd be 1919, wouldn't it? 100 years earlier? How did they evaluate a person's thyroid if they were a woman or a man? Probably more so with women. Women probably take a little bit better care of themselves. But they would do it very simply. All they would do is they would say, before you arise from bed in the morning, take your temperature. That's a very accurate way to measure your thyroid. Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Dr. Morgan. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much for your phone call.
I just have a quick question. A few weeks ago, you mentioned something about the pens. They're coated with ceramic.
Yeah, that was a gentleman from Palestine saying, what do I think about ceramic-coated cookware?
Right. You were going to do some research about the bonding that holds that ceramic on the pan there. Have you done any studies about it?
Absolutely nothing about it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I can't lie to you and make up something. No, and I think my main thrust was that if you go into the grocery store and you see a cook pan that has this kind of medium dark gray covering on it, it's made of aluminum, that's called anodized cookware. And what they do is they kind of weld this plastic coating to it to make it nonstick. But what they don't tell you on the label is that's immersed heavily with fluoride.
Oh, my God.
And so when you, you know, scrambled eggs or you cook, you know, a grilled cheese sandwich in it, you're just soaking up all the fluoride, and for a girl especially,
that's
brutal to the thyroid and the hormones.
Yes.
Because, you know, the thyroid uses the mineral or the element called iodine, not fluoride. Fluoride's very toxic.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
But no, I have to answer your question. No, I have not.
Okay. Okay. Well, I guess if you have the chance to do that, because I was trying to maybe get one of those to see if they work okay.
Well, you know what I want to sell you on? Here's what I did do some research on. There's a store in Tyler that, as a woman, I know that you have never heard of this store before, but I'm going to tell you what the name of it is. This is going to be brand new to you. It's called TJ Maxx.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, never been in it, but I know that.
Oh, that's all I see when I drive by Half Price Books, about a million women. It must be their kind of store.
It must be.
But back there, I found this. I found a blue carbon steel frying pan.
Blue carbon?
Yes.
Huh.
But the point, my sales pitch is to you, it says on the label, this is a very clean form of steel. It's a little bit lighter than cast iron, which makes it easier for a woman to use. But what it does is all the food particles, when you cook in it, start to bond to it. So it actually creates your own nonstick cook pan, like ceramic or, you know, or Teflon.
Okay.
And so if you could just be patient and get one of those for like $17.
Yeah, it's not very expensive either.
Wait a second. You're going to ask me how I know about TJ Maxx. And how I know it costs $17. Well, I plead the fifth. I'm not going to admit that I walked into a girl's store. But I know somebody that did.
Okay.
So anyway, that's one technique that people have used, because the blue carbon steel is a very clean form of steel, and it doesn't impart toxins into the human body. So that's one option you have right there.
Okay. Well, I'll certainly look into it.
Okay, good.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your phone call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And plus, I think I mentioned a study, and this was probably, if I really recall correctly, it's probably closer to 15 years old. But there was an endocrinologist who's a thyroid expert, and he found the highest correlation to women with thyroid problems was the use of plastic cookware. Good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm doing very well, sir.
Good.
I listen to you quite often, and I was kind of curious. I drink a lot of water with, like, lemons and limes in it. Can you drink too much?
The only problem, this is not the answer to your question, but if you put lemons or lime in water that's full of chlorine and chemicals, I think that could be potentially problematic for you. If it's spring water or well water or distilled or filtered water, no such trouble whatsoever. Technically, when Baylor College of Dentistry did a study on What is the worst thing to dissolve the enamel on the teeth? Would you care to guess what they found dissolved the teeth faster than anything else? It's not lemons. It was a drink called Red Bull.
Ooh.
And they said, what can we give people to dissolve the enamel so fast that it just rots the teeth? Well, Red Bull did it. Red Bull may give you wings, but it'll rot your teeth in the process. Now, you're going to think this next thing I'm making up. Of course, you know, have you ever heard that before, that if you put lemons, you know, on your teeth, it dissolves the enamel?
Yeah, I'd heard something about that. That's why I was curious.
Are you just saying that you just love the taste of lemon and lime water?
Well, it's better than sodas.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you're right. Well, I'm just like you. I love the stuff. I can do it every single day. And I've never been asked that question before, but I'm guessing, yeah, there might be a point where after 30 lemons in one day, you might reach your limit on how much lemon juice your body can handle. But lemon juice has got to be one of the most amazing solvents that we could actually introduce to the human body. And this is just my opinion here, but I frequently use lemon water or the juice of a lemon to help dissolve gallstones or to dissolve congealed bile that builds up in the ductwork of the liver where it clogs people up. Or kidney stones, or if somebody has calcium deposits in their fingers. I think this is a pretty good influence where you squeeze the juice of a lemon and put it in water.
What about adding a little bit of baking soda to it? Would they counteract each other? Because one is
no, I don't think so. But you do not want to do that, because if you add baking soda, this will increase your athletic performance, and you will have more energy, and you'll be stronger. So I do not recommend baking soda, because you will start feeling too good.
Okay.
You feel like you understand that point quite well?
No, not really.
No, I'm just being sarcastic, because I was reading an article from Germany this morning, and it showed when they gave men baking soda, it greatly enhanced their athletic performance. But when they gave them something highly acidic, and the thing they gave them that was acidic was ammonium chloride and or sugar. And so this is not rocket science. You have your soda waters, and you will not perform well. You have your baking soda, and you will. So that's pretty cool. It's already been researched.
I appreciate it very much, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for your phone call. I appreciate you. Have a good day, buddy.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, there is a phone line officially open. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. 903-586-5257. Here we go. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. I was calling. My husband has been having some, he's 70, and he's been having some issues with his memory. So we've done a lot of different testing. He went to a doctor, and they did some extensive testing for about 4 hours, and they're recommending that he get on some Aricept.
Ha, ha, ha. I'm sorry, I just have no tolerance for Aricept. I have never seen it work long term, not one time.
Exactly, and that's what I was trying to tell them. But
sorry, I was a little bit blunt with that comment. Can you forgive me for just being so blunt?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, did they actually conclude there was one particular area of his brain that wasn't functioning properly?
Well, they talked more about his frontal brain, the frontal.
Mm-hmm.
Let me back up just a little bit, because we did a sleep study back in September, and he ended up on a CPAP.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have oxygen attached, but just the CPAP, and he seemed to do a little better after that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But then we went to a neurologist. They did an MRI, which came back okay.
Good.
But they're just saying that he can't, he's not able to recall things that's already back in his brain, and he's not able to keep the new stuff coming in as much.
So his short-term memory is not so great.
Yes, he's still functioning. He's still driving some and doing things like that. But I didn't think the Aricept was the solution. And I had called Friday and left a message to try to get an appointment with you. So I don't know if you. Will you be calling us back to try to make an appointment?
I will, yes.
Okay.
I will.
Okay.
Well, two or three things, number one.
Okay.
There is a structure, to me, it looks... You know what the letter J looks like?
Yes.
Well, to me, there's a structure in the middle part of the brain called the hippocampus. And it looks kind of like a candy cane or the letter J laying on its side. And the hippocampus is where, that's where short-term memory probably takes place. And so a lot of times if somebody has short-term memory loss, you want to look toward a structure called the hippocampus. Now, I realize with an MRI, it's got to show complete devastation before anything shows up, which means the whole plan here is just to watch and wait until there's significant damage. But that's way too late. That's just nuts. I will never understand the strategy of saying, well, we don't really see anything, and we're just going to watch and wait. But I think the way that your mind is wired is you want to do whatever you can to preserve the integrity of his hippocampus and brain and to greatly improve that. So at least before I see you, let me get you started in the right direction, okay?
Okay.
When you told me that he had a little bit of a boost or a little bit of improvement once he did the CPAP, that we already know that one of the greatest techniques of all time is increasing oxygen to the brain.
Right.
And so it's very easy for me to look up studies showing that when people have memory loss, if they start walking, you know, 2 miles a day, all of a sudden they perform much, much better on recall tests. And I think it's been proven that the brain, and, well, between the two structures, the eyes and the brain, they require the most oxygen of any system in the body. It's just incredible. And so I think somewhere in here, we can start to figure this thing out. The other thing that really intrigues me, and there might be one or two things that are technically illegal, so I will not be mentioning those over the radio, but I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying they're not accepted by medicine or by the government as something that rejuvenates the brain. But what you want is, you want the brain to start growing some new baby neurons, and the hippocampus has a little bit to do with that. Now, just out of my own curiosity, has he had a little bit of stress in his life? Or a lot of stress, or not any stress at all?
Well, yes, over the years, yes.
Has he consumed alcohol?
Not really, not a lot.
Does he smoke at all?
He has in the past, but he quit probably about 20 years ago.
Well, there is a mushroom extract called lion's mane. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before.
I have.
Well, lion's mane is one of the rare mushrooms. I personally think it tastes delicious. I had Gary bring me some. I didn't have him. He just showed up in my office, and he gave me some, and I ate it, and I thought it was delicious. But lion's mane is called a nootropic, and that means it actually helps stimulate the growth of new brain cells or baby neurons, and that's what you want. If we can get your husband...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Ask away.
Oh, I was just wondering... Do you purchase lion's mane and cook them, or is it come in a pill, or how do you take that?
It can be all the above. Now, I would be probably a bit ridiculous if I said you and your husband trounce around in the forest today looking for lion's mane growing on pieces of dead wood or limbs. Hey, that might be a good plan. It may take you 10 hours to find one in the forest. but in simplicity, you could even do something. There's a... Do you ever order anything off Amazon?
It's rare, but we have.
Well, I mean, that's just one place that you might look up different supplements for sale. One that I've used in the past is called Maju. It's MAJU*S. I guess that's just a person's name. Maju's Mental Mushrooms. But I've seen good results with it. And these are just mushroom extracts that stimulate the growth of new brain cells. And the way that I'm choosing to look at the information you're telling me is, what can we do to help stimulate the growth of new brain cells for the sake of your husband's memory? And that's a beautiful thing, because you want him to be in great working order. He's only 70.
Exactly.
I read a story in the Bible this week in 2 Chronicles chapter 24, and I must admit, I had no clue what I was reading. I said, have I actually read this before? It doesn't even make sense. But the name of the high priest was Jehoiada. And the boy king, he became king of Judah when he was 7 years old. Do you remember?
Yes, I remember. I do remember that story.
Do you remember what his name is?
No.
Does Josiah ring a bell?
Was that his name, Josiah?
I think it was. I could be wrong. But he was 7 years old, and it said that Jehoiada was a great influence upon the young king. And of course, this is the part that really astounded me. Guess how old Jehoiada the high priest was when he took Josiah under his tutelage?
I don't know.
He was 90 years old. How many people do you know of that start their great ministry when they're 90 years of age? And of course, what I thought of, I said, hey, this is long after Solomon, long after King David, long after Saul. No one's supposed to live that long, but he served Josiah for 40 years. Or maybe what I should say is, he was able to serve the great God of the heavens and the earth for 40 years. It said he feared God, but he died at age 130. How'd you like to have a 40-year ministry starting at age 90?
That's crazy.
Well, in order to do that, you might want to have your mind in good working order, right?
Yes.
And so at the very least, and you have to forgive me, sometimes I say things, I'm so blunt, I just pull it back later and go, Roy, you shouldn't have done that, but I cannot stand Aricept. I hate that being offered. That just really gets under my skin. I know it shouldn't. I shouldn't be emotional over that. But I always think to myself, they are putting all their eggs in one basket on this Aricept deal, and they're putting a lot of cotton into it, but it's not going to pay off. Now, I don't know much. I just know I've done this for 30 years, and I haven't seen Aricept work once, long term. Never. But they promote it as if it's the only treatment known to man. But the lion's mane, so if you look up Majus mental mushrooms,
okay.
That might be something that you could just stir it in a cup of coffee and give it to him in the morning. And what I'll do is I'll be able to call you first thing Monday, and I'll get your husband in, and we'll see about taking care of him. But if it is the frontal lobe, it has a lot to do with a person's ability to have, you know, good conversations. Is he really talkative? Does he interact with you really well as far as communication?
Yeah, he's laying here with me. I mean, you can ask him questions if you want.
Oh, are y'all in bed right now?
Sort of.
I think I heard him giggle in the background. He's going, yeah. Are you kidding? It's warm. It's cold outside. Well, but that's one thing that you could take off and run with. The other thing, if I had to choose one substance that's by far and away the most damaging that generates inflammation of the brain, I'd have to choose probably sugar and wheat. Wait, that's two things. Sorry. But if he focused on saying, okay, I hear what he's saying, I'm going to start feeding my brain. I could take some fish oil. I'll start eating forms of meat called fish. Does he like sardines and salmon and flounder?
Actually, he ate sardines yesterday and tuna.
Oh.
He's a lot of sardines.
Oh, boy. I like him more and more every second I hear about him. He's awesome. He's like a... What's his first name, by the way?
Ron.
Oh, man, I like Ron. You know, there's another person that you've heard of. His name has three letters, but the last letter is a Y, not a N.
Anyway. Right.
So, if you could get started on this right here, if he committed to exercising every day, can he walk? Are his feet and knees and hips in good enough condition?
Yes. He's been, he joined a gym, and he's been going every once in a while and walking on the treadmill.
Good. I personally think that if we're talking about rejuvenation, turning around the memory loss, I really think it requires daily training. But then again, I mean, I don't have a crystal ball here. I don't know how many names are written or how many years have been allotted or days for Ron in the Book of Life. But I've got confidence that God loves him and cares about him. And so if Ron takes a step back and says, okay, what is the best possible direction that I could take and run with this? Is it putting all my eggs in the Aricept basket, or can I start eating things like broccoli and spinach and blueberries? And can I eat sardines? I love sardines, personally. Me and Ron might be the only ones in East Texas that like them. Usually I knock the dust off of them on the shelf before I buy them because they just sit there a long time. And so if he started walking every day, we've got to increase circulation and blood flow. I think I can learn that if the CPAP helped him a little bit, then bingo, there's our answer. Increase oxygenation, increase blood flow. I told that guy, I told the story on the radio about the guy that had the foot they were going to amputate, which that makes me mad also because I'm thinking, they're not even trying. They didn't even try. They just said, hey, Let's chop that sucker off and be done with it. Well, yeah, that's just real easy for them, but what about the person that has the foot that's gone? I hate that plan. But he's completely rejuvenated his foot. It's phenomenal. But I told him this. I said, did you know? I'll just call him Charlie for simplicity. That may not be his name, though. I said, Charlie, did you know that people that walk barefoot every single day, they have twice as many arteries in their feet and in their legs as compared to people that don't walk? They just walk with shoes on. He said, I hadn't heard that. I said, if you will trust me on this and if you'll start walking barefoot, you're going to start stimulating your body to adapt. And the way it's going to adapt is it's going to start growing more arteries and more nerves and more veins, and you're going to grow more muscle. And so he's already proven to me he's a phenomenal healer. You wouldn't be calling me on the radio today if you didn't believe that God hasn't designed the body to repair itself given the right circumstances, right?
Right.
And so we want to increase the blood flow and the circulation. So when he goes to the gym, when he exercises and he puts stress on his muscles, this is a good thing. You're asking the body to grow new muscle. And so when you grow new muscle, the brain has to grow new neurons to help service that muscle. I just think your husband Ron's got a brilliant plan.
So he does have a little bit of some low back pain and a little bit of sciatica every once in a while, and that limits him sometimes, but it's not all the time.
Well, I still think that studies show that people that tend to have more lower back pain around age 70, they're just probably not getting as much oxygen and nutrition to the disc and the joints and the nerves that they should. And I don't mean that to be negative. I'm just saying we got an opportunity here. And the opportunity is to do those things that are going to cause circulation to improve and better oxygen and nutrition delivery. And so he probably is built like a commando. Strong muscles, very powerfully built. He could probably lift you with one finger. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah.
So if he keeps up with this, we're going to start seeing some improvement. But it may be with the lower back. Yes, maybe we shouldn't, you know, do deadlifting of 725 pounds first thing off the bat, or run a chainsaw all day, stuff like that. But I think that we could customize a program. But what I'm interested in, does he have any nutrient deficiencies that would promote regeneration of the brain? But what I told you about,
know.
I'm sorry.
I said we don't know, and I didn't know if he needed some kind of detox either.
Oh, well, yes, we are. I'm going to do everything I can to convince you and your husband to do a detox. And so I mentioned this maybe a month ago on the radio. They had that study that was recently produced from the country of Finland. And Finland is really famous for being in the Arctic Circle and next door to Russia, probably also Sweden and Norway. But in Finland, all they did was they followed men for 20 years. I think to start in the study, you had to be somewhere between 55 years of age and 70. So your husband would have been accepted into this study. And they showed that men that never used a sauna, they had the most memory loss and the most dementia as compared to men that used a sauna frequently. So when you heat up the body, the toxins will start rolling out of him. I didn't say push him into the oven.
Right.
But saunas are very inexpensive and cheap. You can buy them online, little portable saunas. They work. The sweat will be rolling off of him. And see, going backwards, the most toxic element to the brain in the mineral kingdom is going to be the element called mercury. And so that prevents nerves from rejuvenating and from healing and repairing. But even the latest study shows that the use of a sauna is incredible at stimulating the release or detoxification of mercury. So there's a lot of ways to go about this. But what I would do is, I want to try to identify, is this a stressed, weakened hippocampus that's causing the memory issues? Is this primarily a problem with the frontal lobe of the brain? Or sometimes it's called the prefrontal cortex.
Okay.
It's not called the prefrontal cortex. I said that wrong. I meant prefrontal cortex. But that's where you have your ambition and your motivation and your drive and how you plan your day and you decide what you want to focus on. So we got a lot of stuff.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we got a lot of different metrics to work on here. But all of these are good.
So you think we should start with going online and ordering some of that Majus mental mushroom?
That's one thing that you could do right now, and I will do everything I can to call you back promptly, get him in. As a matter of fact, I'll just run over to the office and I'll call you this morning.
Okay. And we can talk when you call us.
Yeah,
then.
That'll be fun.
Okay.
But
thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Feel like I've already had like a mini consultation without even talking to him. Thank you very much, ma'am. I appreciate your phone call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye bye.
Thank you.
He said thank you. You're welcome, Ron. The thing of this is, it's not just him. There's probably several other people that are listening right now that this is all relevant information. You know, if you look at the writing on the wall and you said, you know, Dr. Morgan, I'm a little bit concerned because my mother has a significant mental illness and she's suffered horribly from anxiety and depression and she's showing memory loss. Well, you know, it would be good if we could take steps to prevent this in you. Good morning. How are you today?
Fine. How are you, Dr. Morgan?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you for your phone call.
Yes. My question is that I've been having an unusual taste in my mouth for about 3 weeks, and it's mostly with water, and I've been a distilled water drinker for several years now, and it was just strange that changed. So what I did, and I don't know if it was a different brand of distilled water, if that could be the difference, or to test it, I got a Brita filter and a new pitcher and tried changing over to that, and it still is this bad metallic taste in my mouth when I drink water. Excuse me. I wonder if you've heard anything like that.
Oh yeah. The first thing that I always think of with a metallic taste is fungus or mold.
Huh. Well, you mean not in the mouth, I guess, just
no.
In the body?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or in the water. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there any black mildew anywhere in the pitcher?
No. It was a brand new pitcher. I bought it and a new filter and washed it out, and no.
Oh, I totally believe you. It's probably as hygienically clean as it could come, right?
I think so.
Well, here's where I really want to go. Is there any possibility that you might have a little bit of a low-grade sinus infection? I mean, is there any chance that you might have some nasal congestion? When you blow your nose, there's some discoloration that comes out.
Oh, no, I haven't had any of that.
Mm-mm. Okay, well, that over the years, it's been proven that if somebody drinks a swig of orange juice from a carton, it tastes metallic. That's because there's mold or fungus or mildew growing inside the orange juice. You just can't see it. It's microscopic.
I don't drink orange juice.
Wait a second. I've solved the mystery. You're eating leftovers that are 10 years old in your refrigerator. Is that right?
No, I don't think so.
Well, that's the first thing that I think of, but it doesn't have to be that. I would say also, if you went to the doctor and he did lab tests on you, there's one particular enzyme called alkaline phosphatase. This is just a standard blood chemistry profile. When that is below the number 60, my mind starts going, Roy, I bet she has a zinc deficiency. Because sometimes with a zinc deficiency, you can have a metallic taste. Not everyone, but some.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is like anything else. You have 100 people in a room, and every one of them has just a little bit different glitch with their system. You know how people are. They have their strengths, and they have their weaknesses.
Uh-huh.
Me, I have so many weaknesses I couldn't tell you all about them. And I have one or two strengths.
I feel like I'm a pretty healthy person. I try to eat right and drink water. Now, what could you repeat what you said, that alkaline, what was it again?
It's an enzyme, and a lot of times it'll be ALK, and it's just short for alkaline.
Okay.
And it'll usually just abbreviate PHOS for phosphorus, alkaline phosphatase.
Oh, okay.
And so it'll look like alk phos on lab tests. And so if, okay. that, if that comes back at 95, it probably has nothing to do with zinc. But I always start thinking, to varying degrees, anything below 60 might represent a zinc deficiency.
Okay.
And it's not uncommon for people to completely lose their sense of taste or have a weird, unusual sense of taste.
Uh-huh.
With the zinc deficiency.
Well, the food, yes, it doesn't seem to affect, at least I don't notice it with food much.
I don't want you starving to death. You know what I read in, okay, you know what I read in National Geographic about 30 years ago?
What was that?
Well, what they did was they tried to get the body of Napoleon, and they wanted just to test a hair sample to see if somebody had poisoned him, and he came back with just unreal amounts of arsenic. Well, the article on National Geographic was about how poison has been used over the years, and so what young women used to do is they would go off to Paris, France, and they would attend a weekend seminar in the 1700s if they married an older man that was, say, 80, and he was a wealthy nobleman and had a lot of money. And what they wanted to do, because they were 18 years of age, is they wanted to find a way to just slip some arsenic into his food and kill him slowly and reproducibly over a course of a month. Because, you know, it's kind of undetectable back then. Just a little bit of arsenic over a 1 month is pretty reproducible. So is there any chance that your husband is cooking stewed plums for you every night for supper and sprinkling a powder on them?
No, because I live alone.
Do you have a cat that looks at you kind of... Is there a life insurance policy where the cat is the benefactor?
Not that I know of.
I didn't think so. Well, and the other thing is, if you're using distilled water, mm-hmm. usually that's pretty clean stuff, but I think of mold, I think of zinc deficiency, I think mm-hmm. of, like, low-grade sinus infections. Now, this is pretty unusual for me, but I bet you I've seen 3 cases so far this year of mold infections.
Oh,
where somebody had in their nose and it just caused an altered taste perception. There's mm-hmm. other drugs that can do it, but you haven't taken an antibiotic lately, have you?
No, I haven't.
You're not taking any prescription drugs, are you?
I take just a thyroid medicine called Armour Thyroid. It's a natural one.
Are you really sensitive to wheat that you know of?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Mm-mm. Do you normally feel great?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you sound...
I work out 3 times a week. And
you sound awesome over the phone.
I do a lot of walking, too.
Have you changed a brand of coffee or tea?
No.
Do you drink those too?
Yes.
I can tell you that the biggest source of arsenic is going to come from rice, R-I-C-E.
Really?
Yeah. Every so often, mm-hmm. I find somebody eats a lot of rice, and they have those arsenic levels show up really high on a hair analysis, and they look at me like I'm crazy, and I'm going, you know, arsenic can be a little bit poisonous in these levels, ma'am. Or sir?
Would it be an organic rice as well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't eat a lot of it, but
well, it's been a while. I mean, I got that article from Consumer Reports. I want to say Lori gave me that article to kind of help educate me. See, that's the fun part about my job. I have people bring me articles because they think, Dr. Morgan, you need to kind of get smart on this natural health business, and here's an article for you to read. And I say, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to study that. And but tea is very famous for being highly contaminated with toxic elements. And so if you're drinking a new herbal tea, anyway, I would just be suspicious about
mm-hmm.
that.
Okay, I don't drink a lot of tea. I might have, once in a while, have a cup of hot tea, but not a lot. I drink more coffee than tea.
What is the name brand of your coffee? Do you mind if I ask?
One, I sort of mix decaf and regular Maxwell House and Community.
Now you have to understand when they make decaf coffee, they use strychnine.
Oh, uh huh.
You had never heard of strychnine, have you?
Yes, I have. Uh huh.
Well, it's known to be poisonous, but that's what they use to help disassociate or remove or reclaim the caffeine.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's been a long time since I've heard of a person having strychnine poisoning, but it is possible.
Oh, okay.
So just consider that. If I had my way, and I realize I'm getting distracted slightly, but I think it's a valid point. Coffee is one of the highest chemically sprayed crops on the planet, depending where it comes from. So if I could convince you or compel you to consider or prayerfully consider maybe organic coffee, that would probably be a move in the right direction. And coffee that's commercial is really famous for having huge amounts of mold contamination. And so that may go back to what I thought a while ago. So you're not drinking orange juice all day long, and you're not, there's no mold in the pitcher of the house. But coffee is very, very famous for having some of the highest mold and mildew levels of any substance on earth. If I'm not mistaken, that's what is the dude's name? Okay, I forgot it. But he's the maker of Bulletproof Coffee. And that's kind of his claim to fame, is if you buy his coffee, the Bulletproof Coffee, then you don't get all the mold. And he's got a good point there.
And that's the name of his coffee, is Bulletproof?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Do you think I should take any zinc when you said that maybe I was low in zinc?
I don't think you have anything to lose by taking zinc, but zinc is the one mineral that I would caution you, only consume that with food.
Okay.
Unless you want to be nauseated before church tomorrow morning, you should take a bunch of it on an empty stomach. You will not like me at all. You're going to say bad things about me when you go forward to repent of saying all those bad words about me, right?
Well, I certainly won't do that.
Okay, good. But if you take zinc, I think that, and actually the cornerstone of a person's immune system is zinc. It just is. And I think zinc is so underutilized. People need more of it than what they realize. If you want to stay strong in this world that we're living in, you might need a little zinc.
Okay.
Just about every enzyme system in the body that's for growth and healing and repair, it needs zinc to function properly. Okay. So I don't think you can go wrong.
Is it in any food products? Or?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I'm gonna give you a test, and you're gonna tell me if you're gonna say yay or nay, okay?
All right.
Shrimp.
Yay.
Lobster.
Yay.
You're probably going to have a man from church come over to the house today with fresh lobster for you, right?
Not likely.
But if you eat either flounder or salmon, or you have seafood, those are great sources of zinc. I always think that if cows are raised in a very loving environment, it's called let them eat wild native plants. And, of course, I've had a man educate me about this topic over and over again, and he's still working on me because sometimes my skull's a little thick and new information is hard to process. But he's just explained to me when cows are able to graze on more native plants, it's not just all coastal Bermuda. That's probably not really native. But anyway, they tend to have grass-fed beef tends to have a lot more zinc than feedlot beef that's raised on soybeans and corn.
That makes sense.
Do you know anybody that sells grass-fed beef?
No, I do.
And it's remarkable. You know how much they sell a pound of ground beef for?
Oh, dear, $10.
$5.
$5, that's not bad.
You want their phone number?
Yes.
903.
Okay.
388.
Mm-hmm.
2245.
Okay. It's almost $5 at the grocery store these days.
Yeah,
but
what you're getting at the grocery store, that stuff is so pumped up with estrogen that if you're a man, you're going to develop a female-like chest.
Well,
and it's just estrogen overload.
I don't eat much beef at all, but I kind of knew that. It's not good for you.
Well, the store-bought is full of estrogen. It's a good way to screw up hormone levels in both men and women and children.
Okay.
But if you had some grass-fed beef occasionally, I'm telling you, that would be a great source of zinc.
Sounds like a good hamburger.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm going to guess how you make your hamburgers. You cut pickles long ways to where they're completely hanging off the burger, and you have to hold them up with both hands.
That's right.
I knew it. That's probably a sign of great, great intelligence, you know. Well, I really enjoyed talking to you, and I appreciate you very much, and I wish you the very best, and surely we can figure this out. But I would probably go to the coffee and say that's the biggest source of mold that I know of.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay,
thank
good
you so
deal.
Much, Dr. Morgan.
Oh, you're welcome. Right. Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See, I learn everything the hard way. I just wait for something to come to me easily, but no, I usually have to pour into it. But I have discovered that regular coffee can be heavily, heavily contaminated with mold. And you know as well as I do, there's no way on God's green earth that should be good for you. No. Might want to switch to organic. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you?
Well, I think I'm doing fairly well. I seen my doctor here not too awful long ago, and he said he thought he wanted to do a scan on my abdomen, and he tells me that I have some kidney stones. How do I, not kidney, gallstones. How do I get rid of?
Well, I mentioned just briefly to the man on the phone earlier, actually a woman. No, it was a man. He was a guy asking about lemon juice. I think that lemon juice is a very good solvent. Very, very good. And so if you said, okay, here's what I'm going to try. I'm going to try to make it easy for my body to dissolve gallstones. Well, if you took a blender, do you have a blender?
Yeah, I got two of them.
Which one do you decide that you're going to use? You flip a coin?
Yeah, just about. Whichever one, well, they hold different sizes.
Oh, I'm with you. So you've got the large industrial size, and you've got the teeny tiny one, right?
Well, I got a teeny tiny one, and then I got one a little bit bigger.
Well, we might go with a big one the first time to see if we can make this work. But what you'll do is you'll go to the store and you'll buy beets. And if you want to brush the dirt off of them, that's fine. But you're just putting the beet.
I always got beets in the crisper. I blend them up.
You're like five steps ahead of me. So if you take and put the one beet in your blender, you're going to add about 8 ounces or so of unfiltered apple juice. It's the kind that looks like rusty water in the moonshine jug. And so if you put the 8 ounces in, you'll just take the juice of one lemon. So if you have like a reamer of some kind, get all the juice, put in there with it, and add a tablespoon of olive oil. And what you'll do is you'll just drink that every morning. Just blend it up, go to town with it. And throughout the day, if you could take and just squeeze lemon juice or lime juice, this is going to be one way where you can slowly dissolve the gallstones where they can be passed more easily. Because that's what you want them to do. You want your body to eject those. Just like if you had a splinter in your finger and it won't come out. Well, if the immune system is vibrant and strong, it'll push it out eventually, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what you want. But that's one way to go about doing that that's very reproducible. And the other way, it's where you take just a half a teaspoon of Arm & Hammer baking soda and maybe a little bit of apple cider vinegar and a glass of water. Make sure it doesn't explode. I don't see how this affects me if a nuclear bomb goes off in your kitchen counter when you put those two diabolical ingredients together. But if you will, that would be one way that you can start slowly dissolving these where your body could eject them and they could pass. And unfortunately, we're completely out of time. So call me next week and we'll pick it up, okay?
All right. Thanks
for your phone call. I appreciate you, man.
You too.
Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye. You're listening to Health Essentials. I'm Dr. Morgan, KBGS, FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.